I was an owl biologist already before I came here. And then I became a master owl biologist.
Master owl biologist. Yeah, okay. Exactly. All right.
All right.
So if you could refer to me as Master T from here on out, that'd be
just fine. You got it.
Hello and welcome to You Know the Place, the show that explores the Idaho businesses, clubs, and locations you've always drive by but never seem to visit. I'm Joel Wayne, and this is my co-host, Lacey LD Daly.
Hi there.
Hi there.
Ooh, my chin touched the mic. Well.
So, it is a Sunday.
It is a Sunday, and we are approaching episode 10, which I think brings us to the finale of season 2 already. Yeah. Wow. Can you believe it?
No.
That's what we said last time.
Yeah.
But kind of. It's weird to be calling it the end of season 2 when I feel like we have so many ideas on the docket.
But gosh darn it,
we need time to do it.
We do. Yeah. It's just the two of us.
We talked about, you know, I think at the top of the shows, we always try to get right into what we're doing. But we had the chance to look at our numbers recently.
We did.
And we wanted to take a moment to say, hey, you out there, there's thousands of you that are listening. Thank you.
Yeah.
We thought it was just our spouses and our parents.
We, you know, maybe it's because we're writers. Our natural assumption was there are 45 people listening to this. But we learned that that is not the case, that it is really thousands of people who are downloading every month and coming back and downloading multiple episodes.
So thanks for coming on these field trips with us.
Yeah.
And we hope you'll join us for season 3 in the spring. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're not alone either, apparently.
No. So what are we doing this week, last week? Where are we going?
Today, and this almost feels like a bookend or that it's mirroring the finale of season 1, because it also has to do with birds.
I feel like we've got a thing for birds.
Birds of prey.
Oh.
We're going to birds of prey.
Okay, I have never been.
I've never been either.
That seems crazy.
Yeah, a bit.
But, okay. Like, I'm excited.
I feel like you have a question about
this.
Well,
I do because I'm excited because I've never been, but it also seems a little bucket listy in the sense of we are always trying to go to places that are off the beaten path. And this one seems one that might be like, if you come to Boise, you tell people you should go see birds of prey. So why are we going?
Okay, so I've thought this through. I have thought this through a lot. I feel like there are these whole classes of places where you've heard about them, but a lot of people from Boise, if you ask around, people who are actually from here have never been there. The Idaho State House, I will say, is one of these places, too, that if you ask people, because I did that. I asked a bunch of friends about birds of prey, and probably about half of them, people from here, had never been before. They all know about it, but they've never been. And so to me, it feels like it kind of splits the difference a little bit between what we normally do, these hole-in-the-wall places that that you drive by or that you hear about, odd places, and then kind of more of a bucket list type of item.
Okay, that seems legit enough to me.
Right.
And I think that's a good point. I think that maybe there's a lot of places that you inherently hear about because you've been here either forever or for a really long time. And maybe you just assume you know what's going on in there, what it's like or what the experience is. Like you bring up the State House. I think a lot of people probably assume they know what it's like. But I've been on a tour there and you learn a lot.
Yeah.
So I'm excited.
And they have really nice bathrooms.
They do. Yes. Yeah. Put that on record.
Do you want to put it on record? You don't want other people using them if you do.
Yeah, no, actually, they're terrible. Don't go. Is now a good time to address the third person in the room?
Hi.
This is Diana.
Hello.
We have a special guest.
Joel, hi, everyone.
What's going on? So what are we doing? We don't ever have a third person.
We don't, but I guess it was maybe about 2 months ago.
I think so.
We had reached out basically because of your social media. You know, we were followers and fans. You should introduce that.
Okay, that's the segue.
Yes.
Got it. So I'm Diana. I have this Instagram page called Boise Bucket List. I started it 2 years ago when I moved here, so I'm a transplant. And then I came here, I work at University of Idaho, College of Law, so that's what brought me to Boise. I recruit for the entire law school, just regionally and nationwide, and I wanted to document my own experiences in Boise, because Boise has been on a lot of lists itself for young professionals living here, families, things to do, recreational, so I wanted to capture that. And then the page just evolved into sharing it with others. So.
And I think it seemed like there was crossover for us, you know, in terms of, of the some of the places that we were visiting and some of the places that you were visiting. And when we were talking, the one that popped up that none of us had been to and none of us are originally from Boise was Birds of Prey.
Right. Well, my backstory, my father is from New York, so not many access to birds in New York City. But I realized when growing up, he just always liked to birdwatch. And even in our house now in Georgia, he has like bird feeding. He makes sure he gets bird food and he likes to just watch the birds come. So when I see the sign for birds of prey, I'm thinking, I want to go. Never have gone. And then look at this opportunity here. It's like magic.
Yeah.
It just happened.
Here we are.
Now I can go with a group because we can experience it together.
We're going to carpool. Yeah.
Hey, now.
Oh, I did not know that. Okay, great. No, I'm kidding.
Whose car is the cleanest? Yours probably is because mine's not. It has all this stuff in it.
I've got dog hair in my back seat.
Yeah, it probably will be mine.
Sorry, I would have vacuumed.
Yeah.
Well, that's exciting. It's strange that all three of us are transplants. This seems to be kind of a thing. I mean, I always drive by the sign and everybody always talks, but we've never been.
Never been.
So we're going to go there.
It's not far away. I will pass the sign. I'm like, I'm going to go there. And then you keep driving. And then the next day.
Which is basically all those places. Yeah.
Right. Every place that you highlight, I'm going to go there.
Well, then we still need a central concern, right? Joel, did you think about one?
I did. I mean, I think for me, it's kind of what is the buzz about it? What's the buzz about birds, basically? I want to know what the big hubbub is.
All right. A bird's going to be out of the cage.
I don't think we're going to go. It's just going to be a bunch of birds in cages.
I don't know. That's what I assumed for parrots and stuff. And so I just think there's going to be like hawks and vultures flying overhead.
Right, exactly. Raptors.
I kind of agree. I don't know what to expect.
Yeah. I know. And like, I'm super curious about birds, but also really like, I just don't trust them.
Because they're dinosaurs, yeah.
Yeah, and they don't have like, they only have pupils. They don't really have, like, the rest of the eye. And so you really can't decide what their next move is.
You're not going to get your bird voice over hawks and eagles and
vultures? No, I probably will, let's be honest.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm ready to head out and check it out.
All right.
Cool. Ready to explore?
Let's do it.
Yes. Cheers.
Okay, so we just pulled. Mm-hmm. Well, we didn't pull up. We drove in. Around like kind of a windy road.
Pretty windy. Sheryl Crow song popped to my head. Winding road.
That makes sense.
I had a thought driving up because I saw, I don't know if you saw, there's kind of, I don't know what it was, some sort of structure that had a large perch. So is this a reserve? Hmm. Like, are there birds flying out here? Because it looked like a perch that you would want a bird to land on. Oh, or is it just, you know, like a naturally occurring bird that uses those?
I don't know.
That's a good question.
That is a good question. We actually have a really great view of downtown from here, and this is not a place where I would think. I mean, we're just out in the middle of the fields.
Yeah, we took Cole down further than I've ever been, like past Lake Hazel. Mm-hmm. Or I don't know if we're technically still in Boise or if we've crossed over into Cuna or what the mailing address is, but
we'll find out.
Canada.
At this point, Oregon. So. And it's easy to get to.
Yeah, you definitely wouldn't drive by it, but we drive by the signs for it, and it's certainly not hard to get to.
Pretty much everywhere.
And there's a sign that says Library and Falconry Archives. Well, what does that mean?
We have to dig into those archives.
Are they stuffed birds?
Wait a minute. I did not sign up for that.
A little taxidermy. Ooh, we should do a taxidermy episode.
That would be cool.
We could do that. Yeah. That. Should we do it?
Let's go in.
Let's do it.
Okay. We walk in and meet up with Tate, the director of Birds of Prey. Our guide for the afternoon, Tate's the type of outdoorsy person who looks like if he weren't working with falcons and condors, he'd be doing reforestation surveys or managing waterways.
Hey. I'm Tate.
You're Tate.
Welcome to the World Center for Birds of Prey.
Thanks for having us. You're the director?
I am the director of the World Center for Birds of Prey, yep.
Okay.
Which means I have one of the best jobs on the planet. We get to work with birds and get to work with people. And my passion has always been the intersection of really science and education. So I'm trained as a professional research biologist, but then I'm also really passionate about people understanding why we do research in the first place and why it's important to save species, to save biodiversity, that sort of thing.
How long have you been here?
I've been here since 2014.
Okay.
And I moved to Boise to go to Boise State University.
All right.
I went through the Raptor Biology graduate program and studied owls. And I was an owl biologist already before I came here. And then I became a master owl biologist.
Master owl biologist. Okay.
Exactly.
All right.
So if you could refer to me as Master T from here on out, that'd be just fine.
You got it.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with that. I kind of like that.
Okay.
What do you guys want to do?
All the things?
We want to do all of the things and take all of the pictures.
Let's do all the things.
Yeah.
Okay. That sounds great. Well, come over here briefly.
Tate starts by showing us a few birds in the outdoor spaces, including a bald eagle named Sky, which seems particularly appropriate for Veterans Day.
Yes, this is an adult female bald eagle named Sky, a bird that was injured in the wild over a decade ago and lives with us now, an ambassador for her species. Of course, the bald eagle is no longer an endangered species, though they were the first endangered species back in 1966 or 73, as we now know the Endangered Species Act. Bald eagles listed, peregrine falcons listed, California condors listed, but the peregrine falcon and the bald eagle have come off of that list, and they are recovered and doing really quite well. Right, Sky? The World Center for Birds of Prey is the headquarters of the Peregrine Fund. And the Peregrine Fund is a nonprofit organization that was put together back in 1970 to save what bird?
The peregrine falcon.
Oh, you guys are sharp.
Yes.
No, the peregrine falcon was on its way to extinction with just 39 pairs in the United States in 1975, at least in the continental U.S. And so they're on their way out. And what this organization first started doing is raising peregrines in captivity. We figured out how to do that and were able to release over 4,000 of them back into the wild. By having a captive population, it prevented the bird from going extinct while humanity dealt with the issue. And the issue, of course, was DDT, an insecticide that was being used all over the world that was really like birth control for birds. Because it would get into the eggshells in raptors or birds of prey, and when they would sit on their eggs, eggs would crack, they would not hatch, and they just could not,
okay.
couldn't survive.
All right.
30 years of DDT use, and birds of prey were on their way out.
That makes me sad, yeah.
Really sad.
Yeah, that's an alternate.
And so that didn't happen. That didn't happen. Yeah. The recovery of birds of prey is one of the most successful conservation stories of all time. The recovery of the peregrine, the recovery of the bald eagle, and the ongoing recovery of some other birds that I will introduce you to.
All right.
And that we'll explore around.
Cool.
Thank you.
Tate leads us inside to a small room where a presentation is going on in front of about a dozen people. This one given by a volunteer, Meryl, holding a colorful kestrel on her gloved hand.
Different countries have different regulations for falconry. America, very strict. Europe, I think at this point, probably very strict, although I don't know country to country. Some people still hunt with their falcons, but more it's you can go to Winco and buy your steak and then just have your bird for fun. There we go.
Oh my gosh.
This guy is a kestrel eating machine.
Okay, just to clarify what happens here, Tate walks in the door slowly with a massive owl perched on his hand. You can hear the squeaking noise it's making in the background. He jokes that the owl is a kestrel eating machine, and then quickly follows this up by saying this owl, Oliver, has never actually eaten a kestrel. But Meryl does leave the room through the opposite door, kestrel and all.
So this is the largest owl on the continent of Africa. It wants to crawl up on my shoulder and pretend it's a parrot. So Oliver is 9 months old. He's a 9 month old Verreaux's eagle owl.
Oh my god.
Yeah, look at the feet. It's so strong.
And he's only 9 months old.
Just 9 months old, yeah. And their feet. What do you suppose this bird might be eating on the continent of Africa?
Mice
for sure, yeah. And rats. Rodents of all sizes, birds of all sizes. These guys would definitely eat birds.
People?
Maybe not people. monkeys, though.
What?
And okay. Hedgehogs. They've been known to eat baby warthogs. This bird came out of an egg and was fed by people right out of the gate. And therefore, as it's been raised, it looks around at all of us and thinks it's in a room full of owls. Or that it's just another person. It doesn't really know the difference. But he knows me, and we've been together for, you know, all of his life. Any other questions, guys?
How much does he weigh?
She weighs 70 pounds.
Oh my God.
Wow.
You just casually picked 70 pounds.
I have been working out though. So full disclosure here.
You're really not
sure that. No, not 70 pounds. 4 pounds. Four. Only 4 pounds.
Tate tells us a little more about Oliver before giving the floor back to Merrill, the volunteer from earlier. Merrill answers a few questions before sending the group on their way and then chats with us for a bit.
I'm a volunteer. We have about 140 volunteers, I think.
Oh, wow.
So staff does rely on volunteers to do a lot of the tours.
Yeah.
I do a lot of school tours.
Oh,
my
cool.
background is school teacher and physical therapist.
Oh,
and I'm retired, basically. I love the kids' stuff up here. And Tate is such a leader in this way. And Jessica and Curtis and all, they really say, talk up to the kids, you know, don't talk down to kids. And so we encourage them to use their scientific brains and use their observational skills. And we talk about all this stuff and say, we all are here on this planet. We got to make good decisions. And birds can't vote. They can't go to the polls. So we're trying to educate the communities from older folks and to the littles.
Merrill walks us back into the lobby to Tate, who greets us with a very important question. Do y'all want coffee? His generosity tickles us, and we all three accept. So he leads us to the coffee pot in the volunteer coordinator's office. We post up to enjoy a cup of joe while Tate debates the provenance of a small jar of milk in the fridge.
Well, no, I'm not swimming at it, but...
Oh, that's somebody's fresh milk.
Fresh milk.
Might be breast milk. Might not be. I don't know.
That's someone's breast milk, is that what you said?
I said that, but I'm kidding. No, I think
I mean, I wouldn't
kid.
Think it'd be in a half pint jar.
Jeez. You know. All right.
Mike, are you on the radio? I'll find out.
Breast milk.
Go ahead.
Hey, Mike, is that a jar of milk in the fridge up here? Is that yours?
No, it's not.
We were trying to confirm if it is or it is not breast milk. Good, because you're on the air.
Before he tells us about his background.
Where are you from originally?
Originally, I grew up in Seattle.
Okay.
And then I was living on the Oregon coast before I moved here. Spent about 10 years as an itinerant field biologist studying birds in South America and working in all kinds of places, Mexico, across the states, Alaska.
Cool.
Traveled a lot to find birds.
I'm jealous.
Me too.
Kind of a biology degree can be the passport to travel because there's all kinds of projects all around the world that are looking for people to go out and collect the data. And if you can be at a certain place at a certain time, then okay, great, we need you to do this and we will pay you or not. And it might not be very lucrative, but the experiences of, you know, of doing the work, of collecting the information about species, you know, from sea turtles to ground fish or, you know, whatever it is, there's so many amazing creatures out there.
For a very short time, just kidding, for like all of my childhood, I wanted to be Jane Goodall. What is she? She's an ecologist?
Yeah, she's an ecologist.
Yeah, I mean, I did plenty of presentations at those silly things that they make you do when you're in elementary school about what you'll be when you grow up, and I just had everything but her number. I was ready to go. I was already donating to the World Wildlife Foundation. I was getting
What year was... How old were you?
Oh, I was like... I don't know. How old are you in like third grade?
You were donating?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
I had a
You're like nine.
I know.
Wow, good for you.
Yeah, I really have my heart set on it. I ended up not being too good in sciences and math, so...
Womp, womp.
We finish our coffee and then head back out to tour the rest of the center.
I want to tell you a quick story, okay?
Okay.
This relates a little bit to what we were just talking about kids being fired up about their conservation heroes like Jane Goodall.
Yeah.
October 5th, 1970. Dear sirs, me and my friend have been studying birds, especially peregrine falcon. One day he came over and showed me a newspaper article about you trying to help save the peregrine. So we have been going around collecting money to help your project. I hope everything works out all right. Sincerely yours, Oren Starn and Jay Hart.
Oh, my God.
$5. That is, yeah, it was $5.
$5 in 19.
So Tom Cade gets this. He's very touched. And he goes down to the bank, and he opens up a bank account. And the banker says, well, what do you want the account to be called? And he said, well, let's call it the Peregrine Fund. And that's the origin of this nonprofit organization.
Huh.
Okay, we got to keep moving.
Yes.
So owls, of course, we have 19 species of owl in North America. 14 of them can be found in Idaho.
Wow.
So Idaho is an awesome state for owls.
What about South Florida? My university's logo is owls.
Really?
Yes, FAU owls. And I'm like, what?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
South Florida has the second highest diversity of birds in of any state.
And of people, too. Just kidding. Not kidding, but kidding.
We walk through the aviary meeting a harpy eagle named Grayson. Also, our first sighting of LD's bird voice.
Okay. That looks like a monkey.
Hey, Grayson. That's not a monkey. That's a monkey eater.
Oh, my God.
This is a tropical eagle called a harpy eagle.
Oh.
Harpy eagles are probably the most powerful eagle in the world and likely the largest as well. We have been raising harpy eagles in captivity for quite a number of years. In fact, this building here was built to grow harpy eagles, to raise them and release them back into the wild. Our operations moved down to Panama, and we were raising harpy eagles in Panama and releasing them in the rainforest. We released that one. They called him Machito. And Machito was a little bit too interested in people.
Oh.
He went out there, but he kept following people around. And some of the tour guides down there, they knew where he was. And they would go to see Machito, and they would go put food up on a branch, and Machito would come down, and they would take pictures. And then Machito would follow them through the woods. And
is it the bear in Yellowstone or something like that, right?
Yeah, it's not behavior that's conducive to being successful in the wild.
Yeah.
So after 4 years of that, which was really impressive, they decided to bring Machito back into captivity. And then quite a number of years later, he made it back here.
Then it's a Eurasian eagle owl named Wally, who looks at us and promptly turns around, looking back over his shoulder every now and then to see if we've left yet.
One of the largest, most powerful owls in the world. This is kind of this.
Look at those eyes.
My God. It's like I'm not talking to you.
Damn, they gave us her back.
Cold shoulder. Damn.
Then a gyre falcon named Maddox.
This is an Arctic falcon with a circumpolar distribution, meaning they're found all around the north end of the globe.
Does it play with tennis balls?
It does.
So
it'll take the tennis ball and go drown it in this little pond over there.
Before Tate opens a door leading outside to show us a line of large white barns behind a fence.
Now, these barns that we're looking at here, they are the last bastion of hope for species before they go extinct, birds of prey in particular. So if a raptor is down to the last few individuals even, we'll start a breeding population here and start building their numbers back up. Don't let them go extinct. Once they go extinct, they're gone. And so that's where we save species.
So what's in there now then?
So right now, California condors. We have the world's largest captive breeding program for condors. I'm gonna say there's about 50 of them right now, and we just transferred 15 to the wild.
Wow. Then Tate takes us behind a closed door and shows us a tub full of his bird's meals for the day, including a sizable but mysterious carcass wrapped in plastic.
So you'll definitely want to put this on the radio.
Oh, yeah. That's a thing.
This is tomorrow's menu. These birds are frozen. Well, they're just thawing out right now. So there's a couple pullets, chicken. There is, of course, a rat. We have three mice there.
What the heck is that? What is that?
Never mind, let's get out of here.
What is this?
It looks like an otter.
Yeah.
It sure does. I don't honestly know what that is. But it looks a lot like an otter.
It does look like an otter.
Who eats an otter?
Hey, Mike, what is that?
It's one of these Curtis's giant rabbits.
It's a rabbit.
It's a rabbit.
That's so funny.
I said it looked like an otter.
Do you get bit?
What?
Do you get bit by the bears?
Yeah. He bites, but you can see he's not really, well.
It's like, I'll show you.
Yes, you start bleeding, right?
That's a previous scar.
Oh, my gosh.
So, he doesn't really bite that much. I mean, and they can't.
This is the guy with the bleeding hand.
Yeah.
Just to clarify here, another employee, Mike, appears from the other room with a peregrine falcon on his hand. And the moment LD asks if he bites, the falcon bends down and draws some blood from one of Mike's fingers. It's kind of horrifying and kind of perfect, too. We leave the feeding room, and Tate talks to us a bit about the California condor.
So I want to talk a little bit about California condors. course. And the condor is North America's largest flying bird, 9.5-foot wingspan, about a 22-pound bird, so about twice the weight of a bald eagle. And the condors were down to just 22 individuals in the 1980s. They were on their way to extinction. DDT was removed from the landscape in the early 1970s, paving the way for the recovery of the peregrine, the recovery of the bald eagle. A lot of people thought the condor was going to follow suit and recover as well, but it didn't. And so by the mid-1980s, it was clear that it was going to go extinct unless the birds were captured out of the wild and brought into captivity. By 1987, every single condor on planet Earth was living in a zoo setting. There were no more in the wild. Then the birds were raised in captivity. They took okay to that. They did reasonably well. And the population was big enough that the birds started to be released back into the wild. The recovery in the wild is hamstringed because the problem has not been fixed. It's been identified. We know why condors are dying in the wild, but we have not fixed the problem as a society. Condors are dying from lead poisoning. They're eating spent lead ammunition out of carcasses, out of animals that have been shot, and that is killing them. We took these 30 deer and we went to 30 different meat processors and we had the meat returned to us all as venison burger. And then we x-rayed the burgers that were packaged for human consumption and we found lead in 1 in 3 packages.
I'm gonna have to be a vegetarian soon, guys.
Tate tells us a little more about the conservation efforts to swap out traditional ammunition with non-lead alternatives, not only for the sake of birds like the California condor, but for human safety. But unfortunately, it's become a politicized debate. Next, Tate takes us outside to see one of their condors in the flesh.
What's that one's name?
This one's Tapu. Huh. And Tapu is in his mid-30s, hatched at the San Diego Zoo, and transferred here, one of the founders of our breeding program. He's been here for a long time, has a lot of birds, has a lot of young in the wild. And so because his genetics are well represented in all the wild populations of condors, he has kids in those populations. Now he's kind of come off of the breeding rounds, and now he's kind of hanging out here with us.
All right, why not?
He's an educator now.
Yeah,
moving
on up.
Yeah.
Might be a demotion from the from being a stud. So we have a large investment in every one of these birds, and so we follow them, but it's also important to, unfortunately, to follow them and determine the cause of mortality, because they don't survive for very long in the wild. The wild is a difficult place for the condor right now, and the reason is because there's all these toxic gut piles everywhere. There's all these animals that are dead that have lead in them, and so the condors find them, eat them, and they die of lead poisoning. And the way that we know that is because we know where every condor is.
Last, we see two bachelor eagles sharing an aviary and hear LD's bird voice again.
Oh, wow. Oh, hi. Oh. Are they male and female?
Yep.
Oh, look at you. Are they romantically involved?
Yes. Are they? Okay. They match
not.
On Tinder.
They're not?
They're not romantically involved. Both of these birds are imprinted on people.
Oh,
and so they really like to be around people, and they're just like, what is this? Why am I in here with this eagle?
Before we visit the archives and the falconry exhibit in a separate building with big windows that overlook Boise.
So falconry is the sport of hunting with a trained bird of prey.
Thank God you explained
This.
I didn't want to ask.
Yeah. This is a red-tailed hawk. It has a characteristic hood on it. The hood is almost like blinders in a horse in a parade. When these birds don't have the visual stimuli, their blood pressure goes down, their heart rate goes down, they just get really calm, they don't want to fly. And so when you're transporting a bird, when you're not hunting with a bird, one technique is to train it to the hood, because it's almost like an on-off switch for the bird. And then you take the hood off and the bird's like, bam, let's hunt, let's go. And some of the traditional equipment, the jesses, the bell, the jesses are the leather straps that are hanging off the anklets attached to a leash. And so the bird would be detached right there at the between the leash and the jesses outside of the fingers. And then the bird would fly and hunt. You go rabbit hunting.
It brings it back to you?
No, it's not a retriever.
Oh.
And so that's what the bells are for.
you hear the bells, like, oh, we got something. If it's out of sight, usually you can see where it's going.
And then you have a dog joking?
And then you follow it, and then the bird would be there with the rabbit, and then you typically have a little tidbit, a little rabbit piece or something, maybe a little piece of mouse. And then the bird comes back to your glove, and then you take your rabbit and you feed your family. Long before people were hunting with shotguns, people were hunting with raptors.
Tate walks ahead of us through an ornate hallway that looks totally out of place. And that's because it kind of is. It leads into a different room with a Middle Eastern desert display. In the background, you can hear music and voices talking in Arabic. And it really does feel like you're in a different world.
I did not expect to see this.
No.
In here? He's like, I'm turning on some lights. Okay. Not in the Arabian desert.
So falconry may have originated in the Middle East. The culture in the Arabian Peninsula has been involved in falconry for thousands of years. It's probably the current hotspot around the world for a place where falconry is really, really popular.
Wow.
This is an authentic Bedouin tent, goat hair tent, that would be used for a hunting camp in Saudi Arabia.
Wow.
I wasn't expecting this, Tate.
I did not expect to see this when we came through.
I feel like it's warmer in this area.
Yeah,
too.
It is. It's
fiery. So Sheikh Zayed is the founder of the UAE, United Arab Emirates. And the Sheikh Zayed Foundation essentially built this exhibit here to teach Americans about falconry in the UAE and falconry on the Arabian Peninsula.
Really?
Huh. This quarry is a large, fast-flying, powerful bird. And sometimes the best chases are the ones in which the Hubara escapes the falcon many hundreds of feet above, or when the flight covers a wide-ranging territory. One thing is certain, a kill is far from guaranteed.
We leave the archives and falconry exhibit, and Tate offers us one last word of wisdom.
Birds of prey use the landscape holistically. They don't recognize our political boundaries. You know, a Swainson's hawk that hatches in Boise flies to Argentina and uses all the land between here and there. And a peregrine falcon could hatch in Alaska and can make it down to Patagonia. You know, so the way that birds use planet Earth is so compelling. There's so much connectivity there. And so when we look at conserving birds of prey, we are looking at conserving the entire Earth. Right, because that's what they use. And so it's not necessarily humans that are the problem. We just need to keep our poisons to ourselves. And that's not only good for nature, but it's also good for humanity.
Then it's back to the car to recap the day.
So, thoughts?
The fact that it's that close to downtown, that close and such rich, I mean, so much information, and particularly about Idaho. So I'm just fascinated.
Yeah. One of our common refrains is, like, oh, I want to find an excuse to come back. And it's like, dude, like, you need no excuse to come back here.
Seeing the birds, it's just like something happens inside.
I'm like, yeah,
it's
why am I smiling so much?
It's my energy and Goodall. Yeah. That's what I think. My energy and Goodall's coming out.
Oh, that's endearing.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Just seeing the young boy be so engaged and ask questions. When you're around adults all the time, that spark isn't always there. Seeing him just engage, that's why I'm like, I want to come back and tap into, like you said, your inner Jane Goodall and my inner just being so inquisitive and curious. And I like when you come with some expectations, you leave saying, wow. Particularly the...
Oh, I know the falconry.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Now they know the place.
Yeah.
Now
you know
the place. And cross it off your list.
Yeah, and cross off your list.
I think,
I like
bam.
That. Yeah. All right, crew. We're good?
We're good.
You did it.
Good job, guys.
All right, back in the studio.
You got it.
After Birds of Prey.
Right. First off, I feel like big thank you to Diana DeJesus for joining us on this field trip. Really, really great to have another curious explorer on hand, somebody also not from here originally who likes to go out and find these other places. So
yeah, I'm going to call her the third wheel because that's what it seems after you've established.
It sounds like slightly negative, but it's
not. No, but it wasn't. And what I really appreciated was just the added observation that came outside of kind of, you know, the rhythms that we've established mm-hmm. as a duo.
Yeah.
And I really liked how, I mean, she was into it, we were into it, but she was also into how into it everyone else was.
Yeah.
She was really inspired by just seeing the curiosity at work there. And I think,
sure.
you know, working with students, that's a natural part of kind of her as a human. And so I appreciated that.
Yeah.
So thanks, Diana.
Yeah, thank you, Diana. And if you are not following her on Instagram, at Boise Bucket List, go out and do it.
Yeah, you should do that.
Yeah. Initial impressions.
I was not expecting to enjoy the falconry archives as much. And that's mainly because I had no idea that stuff existed.
Totally.
And I don't know if I'm making myself seem like I live in a bubble, but I'd seen pictures of like hooded falcons before, but I never quite understood everything. And it all came together in that archive building and in that exhibit that I was like, whoa.
Yeah, absolutely.
What about you?
I felt like I had a smile tattooed to my face. And also, I know I say it after a lot of our more positive or better experiences, but I, again, once again, found myself thinking, do I want to work with birds now?
Oh, my word.
And I didn't get that when we went to parrots and stuff necessarily. But this, there was so much education involved in this. I felt like, honestly, we could only include 20 or 30% of the information that we actually heard, which was so incredibly interesting. You know, issues of lead in ammunition, the way owl ears work, preventable extinctions, all these components that really, when it came down to it, we just couldn't include all of it in there in the episode.
So then what about your central concern?
Well, my central concern really was, what's the buzz about birds and birds of prey? And on the one hand, it's a visceral, visually stunning experience. You're up close with these huge birds, and they're just fascinating creatures. And then on the other hand, the work they're doing at Birds of Prey is so important. And as a visitor, you can be a part of that. They rely on volunteers, they rely on donations, they rely on education to keep their work going. So it's so worth the time to go out and do that. And I would recommend it, highly recommend it to anyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that kind of is like my final takeaway.
Okay.
I just feel that there's something about centers like these, like zoos and museums, that ignite something. And not just me, but I think us as humans. It's probably our curiosity or something along those lines. But I would like this episode to serve as a PSA, if not just a friendly reminder for all of us to try to do this kind of stuff more often. We need to stop taking these things for granted. We need to stop assuming that we've seen one zoo, we've seen them all.
Yeah.
And just get out there and do it.
I like that. That's really good. My final takeaway, it was a funny moment going back over it in my head. It was actually, A, trying to figure out what the milk was in the jar.
Yeah, was and, it breast milk?
And whether
or
it was
it
breast milk. And then we had another similar experience trying to figure out what the dead animal was in the back.
Yes, there's a lot of sleuthing going on in that place.
And I think Mike, on both ends of those, was the recipient of the questions
about,
Mike, what is this?
Oh, he didn't put that together until you just said that he was the same guy. Oh,
yeah.
Mike with the bleeding finger.
Mike with the bleeding finger, yeah. So that's it.
That's a wrap.
That's a wrap.
That's a season wrap.
I'm not ready. I am ready. It's coming up on the holidays. I think it's a good time to wrap up on it and start on production work.
So if you haven't heard all of the episodes from season one or season two, definitely check those out.
And we're still listening. We're absolutely still listening, even when we're in production phase. Continue to send us your suggestions. Listen, follow us on Instagram at you know the place. Yeah.
Shall we?
Shall we?
Bloopers.
Hello and welcome to You Know the Place.
What is that?
You can laugh like that too.
That's very creepy. Do you ever think about how weird it is that we live in Idaho? It is very weird. Like, what's going on there? And like, a lot of stuff, actually.
Yeah, there's a lot of things going on.
There's a lot, like this podcast.
Hey, LD.
You had that planned.
Yeah, we should take a picture of it.
That's good, LD.
Are my big thighs in the background?
Yes, they are in there, but I'm not, you know.
I lilt too much. I need to stop.
Define lilt. Okay, thank you.
So.
Yeah.
So.
You're looking really smiley. What do we got going on?
Yeah, that's going to make it sound really creepy.
Probably hit record.
Okay.
Oh, come on. You Know the Place is a podcast brought to you by Boise State Public Radio. Our music is James Dean Kendall and the Eastern Oregon Playboys. Thanks this week to Tate, Merrill, and Mike at the World Center for Birds of Prey for showing us what the place was all about. And a big thanks again to Diana De Jesus of the Instagram account Boise Bucket List for helping us check this one off our own list.
Ten roms reach out to me from across oblivion. stone now.